WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome in to the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, episode 268. We already had a kind of emergency pod earlier in the week when Jerry McNamara was announced as head coach of Syracuse men's basketball. So kind of a multi-pod week, maybe a third podcast if we have a special guest going. Who knows? We do have an interview today. Head coach of Duke men's lacrosse, John Donowski, will join the pod later on, so feel free to stay tuned, listen to that, make sure, great interview, you don't want to miss it. Josh and I sit down, talk their season so far and what to expect at Syracuse. You know, Josh, I want to start with, as we always start, you know, even though AJ is gone, we still want to carry on the weather tradition that Jordan and Ethan and the people before them started. It's starting to warm up, 50 degrees today. I think it's tomorrow's maybe 65. So
yeah,
it's nice in Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting, right? I mean, you get 50s and then, you know, you got 30s on Friday. So we're still in that like really inconsistent time where you get a couple nice days and then you get a week of snow. But it looks like 50s and 60s could be here to stay after the weekend. I know we got a little bit of rain in the forecast, but we're looking at 60s Monday through Wednesday next week, so maybe this is the end of winter finally.
Wouldn't that be nice? Hopefully we don't get like a random April snowstorm that has been known to happen here in Syracuse, but how nice it would be to stay in the 60s. That would definitely be sweet. You know, they used to talk about Chipotle. I don't think I'm a big Chipotle guy. You know,
not here.
Josh.
Bad
is not,
experience.
So we won't even touch on that. We'll find our own niche topic that we'll let the frequent listeners of the Ostrom Avenue Podcast in on in the coming weeks and months. I want to start Syracuse basketball. Obviously, not a lot of new news. Jerry McNamara's done some media, not a lot, but done a couple of media things in the last couple of days. We haven't got him on the podcast yet, so the real media will start when GMAC comes on the Ostrom pod. But seriously, in all seriousness, Giving Day was yesterday when they announced it. The night before, made everything official yesterday. So Syracuse raised a lot of money, and I think that was something good. I was wondering if Syracuse would do that. You know, their big fundraising day, Syracuse would announce officially the big hire on Giving Day and try to rally the troops and get NIL and funding, although this won't specifically be NIL besides that rev share money. But it's good to see that Syracuse is kind of making smarter decisions in terms of trying to raise money and finding unique ways to do that.
Yeah, and I thought it was – I mean, they've been pretty interesting with the timing stuff, you know. Brian Blair gets announced as the new AD or I think it was there was something where it was the new chancellor when Mike Haney got announced as the new chancellor. Yeah, Fran was there. I'm pretty sure Gate was there, and Autry was on the road. So he couldn't come to the new chancellor's, commencement ceremony. And then Jerry McNamara gets hired as the head coach, and it's all of a sudden it's Q's Giving Day, and it's like, well, here's our new coach. Here's a great reason to donate money. So they seem to be very consistent with their timing on some of these things. Yeah, I think there was a lot of talk about not having enough money last year and the NIL being in the bottom half of the ACC. Well, you saw people string together hundreds of thousands of dollars in just one day, and that was not really backed by any donors. It was mostly just Syracuse fans on the internet giving five, $50, $100, $200. And before the end of the day, you've got over $200,000 for the new head coach of this team, and he already has that at his disposal. I don't think there was really an issue with the money. I think there was a lack of talent and maybe a lack of coaching, but for them to sit back and say that they didn't have enough money to be competitive when the fans completely proved them wrong on day one, I think it speaks a little bit about what maybe was going on behind the scenes.
Sure. Yeah. I don't think you're entirely wrong. I do think there was definitely a lack of money issue with, but definitely not the full reason.
No, I
And
can't.
so
I
it's.
don't know why you could blame it strictly on the money when you see an effect like that immediately.
Yeah,
Because the
I
fans
agree.
care. The fans care. They want to see this program succeed. They're starving to see this program succeed. So they really have no reason not to want to contribute to see this team succeed. And I think we saw that yesterday.
True that. I think also a big factor is Syracuse will definitely need the bigger money donors. And
Yes.
so will Syracuse be able to attract that as much as it did maybe the grassroots yesterday? Who knows? We'll obviously see, and we'll have you covered here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. One last topic on basketball. Siena guard Gavin Doty entered the transfer portal today. We're recording this Wednesday afternoon. Interesting timing, maybe not. Obviously, a guy that Jerry McNamara kind of compared himself to, said they're both that type of crazy and same mentality of a basketball player. And if there's one thing about Jerry McNamara, the basketball player is that you can't question the mentality that that guy had. Count it out. He's a winner. Led a team. Small guard, and he made it happen. And carried at times the whole Syracuse city on his back. So maybe an interesting guy that Syracuse can go out and get. Doesn't have experience at the Power Conference level, but I mean, he played really well against Duke, and that's pretty much as tough as you can get in any Power Conference at all.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say, like, the only power conference game they got this year was against Duke. And I mean, he put together a pretty good fight against that Duke defense. I mean, he was going right at Boozer on some of those possessions, and that was really good to see. And he said after the game, he's gonna play for Coach Mack wherever he goes. And GMAC leaves Siena to go to Syracuse. Gavin Doty announces he's in the portal the next day. I think this is a done deal, and I think Syracuse is going to look forward to cheering for this guy because, I mean, regardless of if you think this guy can play at a power level or not, I mean, when you have Jerry McNamara saying this kid is a mini me and this kid plays the way I did, that should get you pretty fired up about what this guy could do for Syracuse.
For sure. He's from Fulton, New York, 40 minutes north of Syracuse. Hometown kid, can hoop. A guy that I think the fan base will gravitate towards and like. So that's definitely something. That's all, like, all the basketball news that we have right now. So obviously we'll definitely have more next week when transfer portal isn't open till March or April 9th, but more players will start to enter their names in. Jerry McNamara said earlier today that he's gonna have meetings with some of the Syracuse
Yeah.
basketball players. I saw a comment on Gavin Doty's post from Kyan Anthony with a fire emoji.
I think
So,
Gavin Doty also commented on a Kyan post yesterday with some sort of emoji. So it looks like they're flirting a little bit at possibly joining forces.
maybe. And I think if you're a Syracuse fan, Kyan Anthony is someone that you want around this program. Can he get better? Yeah, of course. But the Anthony name and the brand and the eyeballs definitely help. That's all I guess we will say right now about men's basketball. Women's basketball
Oh boy.
beat Iowa State in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Second round game, we'll talk about. Not sure for how long. It was a tough one, down by 50
53 and a half.
points at some stretch. 53-point loss to UConn. Coach Jack had some words after the game that we'll touch on. But overall, we want to just touch on the season overall, and obviously talk about that Iowa State game where Syracuse played really, really well without Dominique Darius. I would call this a successful season. I think even without that win against Iowa State, I would call this a successful season. But beating one of the best players in the country, Audie Cooks, definitely helps.
Yeah, and I don't even really think they beat Audie Crooks. I mean, she went off for 37 points, so she did her thing. And what FLJ was really focusing on was limiting everyone else on that roster except for Crooks. Iowa State, 3 of 22 from downtown. Syracuse under Felicia Legette-Jack is a defensive unit. They thrive when they can play good defense, and you saw that in full force. And Audie Crooks and Uche Azoje, that was the matchup we were previewing going in. And even though Crooks had 37 points, Azoje did her thing too. She was able to get a couple baskets down low in the fourth quarter when Iowa State was starting to creep back into the game, and Azoje kind of settled in and hit a couple jump shots to give Syracuse that edge towards the end of the game. But I mean, Griffin, this game probably goes Iowa State's way if Olivia Schmidt doesn't catch fire and knock down five straight threes in the second quarter. I mean, she was the unsung hero of that game. Or maybe she was the sung hero, I should say, because I mean, just you didn't expect to see that. Darius is out, but to see Olivia Schmidt just step up in a game of that magnitude, I mean, she hadn't scored double-digit points all season. She puts together 15 points in that second quarter, and that was the difference in that game.
It was, and for her to do that on such a big stage when, we've seen her maybe knock down two threes in a game, three threes, but to jump to five career high in points and three pointers, she took everyone by surprise. I was down in Charlottesville for the women's lacrosse game, and so wasn't watching it entirely. And then I turned on the broadcast, and I was like, "Wow, is Syracuse going to win because of Olivia Schmidt?" And
Yeah,
yeah,
and they did.
they did. Uche continued to impress me. The free throw line extended jumpers, the baseline jumpers, like those are stuff that someone of her size and height should not be able to hit. And so when she's putting the ball on the floor, it's really hard to defend. And obviously, season over, transfer portal opening soon. If Syracuse can keep Uche Azoje, I mean that's the top priority of this offseason.
It's gonna
We'll
be
be
tough.
interested. It'll be tough, but Syracuse can do it. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes without question saying that any team with Uche Azoje on it will be competitive. And I know Syracuse would probably need four Uche Azoje caliber players to beat UConn to surround her on the floor. But I think it says a lot about they were able to go out and get Uche Azoje, and they built. I don't know if you want to say they built around her because Layla Felia and Dominique Darius were really the two pieces you were looking at the start of the season. But I was watching film on Azoje before the season started, and I was really impressed with her. I thought at the start of the season she was going to thrive in the ACC, and she absolutely did. And being only a freshman, yeah, she might be 21 years old, but I mean, she's still got 3 more years. If they can muster up enough money to keep her here, I think you have to be feeling pretty good about this team. Especially going forward. I mean, they were the 5 seed in the ACC this year. If they can really get some more players and build around her, I mean, Syracuse, they could legitimately be a contender in the ACC because while they were 1-6 in quad one games this year, they were close a couple times. I mean, they had a really rough start against Louisville in the regular season. They couldn't win that game, even though they were basically even with them after not making a basket in the first quarter. They were close against North Carolina. They were close against Virginia Tech. So there's a couple of games that go their way just this year. I mean, you can build on that. And this team, absolutely under Felicia Legette-Jack, will be a force in the ACC for several years, especially if they can keep Azoje.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, top priority. Maybe you can get another year out of Dominique Darius with waivers and all of that. Might be tricky. But Filia, obviously, gone. You got Sophie Burrows back for one more year. Hopefully, she can get back to where she was at her sophomore year, percentage wise, and take a step up volume wise. I still think Syracuse, even if they have Darius back, would need another ball handler. and maybe
Yeah,
a little scoring threat.
I like Shai Hawkins to kind of slot in the starting lineup. She got a little bit of run at the start of the year. I think she's a great player, and I think maybe not as the one if they go out and get a point guard or if Schmidt runs the point. I think Hawkins should have a sizable role next year, even if Darius is back. I think her game, especially down the stretch of the season, was impressive to me.
Yeah, and that's the fact with this team is that Coach Jack brought in a lot of high-level recruits, but because of the not the seniorness, but the upperclassmen being so experienced and the plug-and-play ability with Zoje, they didn't get as much run as you would think. Shai Hawkins, Kyrus Scott, even though they're sophomores, then you have Camden Nelson, Jazzin Cooper. These are players that have a lot to grow into. And so it'll be interesting if Coach Jack can get the most out of them, which he probably can. Another name, Josh, before your time here, but Alyssa Latham was a freshman at Syracuse, transferred to Tennessee, spent 2 years there, and now back in the portal. So maybe
Homecoming.
Coach Jack dips in. She was someone that was great, I guess now 2 seasons ago for Coach Jack. And then took the SEC money and maybe decides to come back like a Deuce Chestnut, in football terms. So that'll be interesting. Obviously, the portal will be open. We'll be tracking that for women's basketball as well. Maybe Syracuse loses some players. Maybe Syracuse brings in some players. Who knows? That is the deal with the portal. We don't really know what's going to happen, and that's the fun part. That's why I love the transfer portal season, recruiting as well. So we'll have you covered on that front as well. Syracuse men's lacrosse. They are hot, coming off a big win against Georgetown, a game where they dominated for most of it. Georgetown kind of came clawing back in the end, but it was a true Syracuse win in the dome in front of a big Syracuse crowd for a non-ACC game, a non-top 10 showdown, even though Georgetown was ranked just outside of that. But what was the one thing that maybe stuck out to you about this one?
Yeah, I think there were a couple of things that stuck out to me about this one. First, I mean, you saw it against Denver, but they struggled at the start again. I thought in the first 5 minutes of the game, rushing possessions, just kind of forcing shots. I mean, they had 90 seconds on the shot clock, and they're just kind of throwing stuff 20 seconds into it. And I thought Anderson Moore was going to dominate just from the first couple minutes of the game, but then they kind of settle in. And something that we had seen at the start of the year. They're a little fancy. They're a little sloppy sometimes. But I feel like the last two games, I mean, you saw at the start of the game, a minute into the Denver game, Finn Thompson chases the Pio's netminder, Grayson Manning, and basically just hawks him down, knocks the ball out, flips it to Anderson for a quick goal. And then again, I thought in this game, the big turning point was at the end of the first quarter, one of the Georgetown defenders just kind of stumbles, and Thompson's all over him again, and he picks it up and just rifles one through. So I feel like this team has really started to come around. They're kind of, instead of settling or being a little too passive on the offensive end, they've been a lot more aggressive lately, and they're kind of pouncing on teams, making them uncomfortable. And when you're down 3-1, you're a little uneasy, especially when you're playing a good team like this. After they reclaim that lead, they really never look back. So when they get that energizing play, when they get the goalkeeper out of the net and they force a turnover, or they force a turnover when one of the D middies slips, that is when this team is deadly, because that momentum shift was huge. They scored 8 goals in that second quarter, set a new season high for goals and a half. They had 12 against the Hoyas. So I think for me, the aggression and how, it's a little bit uncharacteristic of this team to be that aggressive on the offensive end, that's really started to show. And I think that is what you should take away from this game.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the 8-3 second quarter leads to that 18-12 win. It was nice to see Syracuse kind of get back to being dominant after times where that road trip where it was a little shaky. The Denver game came down to one goal,
I
and
didn't think they
you,
dominated any game on that road trip. I know people will say they kind of dominated Hopkins. They didn't really.
that's what I was gonna think. Like the Hopkins game, they looked pretty dominant at times. But besides that, it was all close.
I mean, I didn't think the Air Force game was all that great of a game. I don't think the coaching staff was really happy that, they were trailing to Air Force, who had only won one game, and they really didn't put them away until the middle of that fourth quarter. So yeah, I mean, I know it's a tough thing, and being away from the dome 37 days in a row, really not you know, the best thing for a team to be that far extended from home, but I thought they managed it. And we talked about how this was a successful road trip. They went 4-2 and they picked up a couple, a trio of good ranked wins, and they string another one together against Georgetown. But Griffin, this Duke team that they have coming up, they split with them last year, and you know, Duke, they're always a very solid team. And I don't know. I don't know if they'll have the same luck against Duke if they make some of those mistakes. I mean, talk about that 3-minute unreleasable they got in the fourth quarter. If they keep shooting themselves in the foot with some of these penalties and some of these careless plays, down the stretch in ACC play, that's not going to fly.
It won't, and you know we'll touch on it with Coach Janowski in a few minutes. But Duke's a good team. If Syracuse plays undisciplined, they've gotten into some fights in these games, these skirmishes, and like Chuck Kaczynski almost taking a guy's head off, literally. Like we say that figuratively a lot,
Oh,
but Chuck Kaczynski was close to knocking some heads loose, and he rightfully got ejected out of that game. I'm not like calling for his head. I think. Calling for his head. Funny. But I'm not saying that if I were a coach, I'd be mad at Kaczynski for what he did. Obviously, probably. But you know, that's the physicality of playing Syracuse. Though that's in the old days, but if we asked Rip Beardsley about that hit, he'd be like, yeah, that was another Tuesday in the office.
old school, man. That's a
Yeah.
90s hit right there. That's clean back in the day, but I mean, Griffin, he literally tried to decapitate him. I mean, there
That's
was
what it looked
really
like.
no argument against that being an ejection and a 3-minute unreleasable.
No, it doesn't. But and that's what people want Syracuse to be. They want Syracuse to be the big bad boys. And you know, do I hate it? No, I don't. We make sure to listen to our interview with Coach Janowski coming up in just a little bit. That game against Duke is on Saturday. We'll now touch on women's lacrosse. Coach Thorpe's squad rolling 8 straight wins for the Orange. I mean, I guess we're just going to bring up Rick Beardsley again. Was he right about this squad? The fact that their defense is legit, probably the best in the country, but I don't think it's close either.
I don't think it is either. And I know they played yesterday and they didn't really have a great game. And, you know, Coach Thorpe wasn't really happy with the win, but I think it was still a good win. I mean, that's another road win for this team. They go on the road and they beat Northwestern. Then they come home and beat the top defense in the country in Yale. Statistically speaking, I think we can argue that Syracuse is the top defense in the
For
country.
sure, for
And then
sure.
they go beat Virginia on the road, and then they go beat UAlbany on the road. So you have three in the last four games, you have three wins away from the dome, and then you have a win against the nation's top defense in terms of goals allowed. So, I mean, Griffin, I mean, this team at the start of the year, 0-3, they weren't out on this team, but they were a little worried. They played great competition and they couldn't really hang with them. 4-goal loss to Maryland, 4-goal loss to UNC, and then they go out west to Stanford and lose 8-6. But this momentum that this team has right now, I mean, it starts with the defense, absolutely. And I think we've talked about the stretches of the season. They've already gotten through the hardest stretch at the start of the year, and then they had to go and play Northwestern on the road in Yale. That was the second stretch of the season that you thought was going to be tough. They got through that with relative ease. I mean, they stymied these teams, and now they have a little bit of that easier stretch again. They got Pittsburgh, who's ranked, coming up on Saturday, but they're a lot better than Pittsburgh, in my opinion. And then they have Cornell before they get into the thick of ACC, where we see them play against Duke and BC again. BC giving Syracuse women's lacrosse challenges all across the board the last few seasons. I said it last week. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. We see Syracuse and UNC playing in the ACC championship this year.
Yeah, I think there's a great chance Syracuse doesn't lose a game
Yes.
up until that championship game against UNC,
Got to get by
which
BC, though, and that one's also on the road.
you
They
gotta
haven't
get,
looked
but
great. They have not looked great this year. It's definitely
it's a
not the
different,
BC of the last 3 years.
it is not. And that's what's exciting is that this team is finding its stride. BC, you can finally get over that hump. Was maybe that was just a Kayla Traynor thing where she couldn't beat her former head coach, Acacia Walker-Weinstein. And so it's interesting, you know, Syracuse is on a roll. The offense, there's still, I think, a lot of question marks. Two back-to-back 6-5 wins. Virginia's a good team. Yale's a good team. But you have to find your offense, especially if you're going to be going up against UNC, because they will put up goals no matter how good your defense is. Even against BC, like, you got to find your attack. And Molly Guzik, Caroline Trinkus, We've been talking about it. Like, she's been not down, but Syracuse has kind of needed more from Caroline Trinkus, and she delivered a hat trick against UAlbany. It was a matchup with Syracuse against Katie Rowan Thompson, who played for Syracuse, obviously one of the best Syracuse lacrosse players of all time. Coach Thorpe and Coach Thompson played together, or not played together, coached together on the women's team back under Gary Gate. So that was a fun game for Syracuse. I mean, a tough fight from UAlbany, a team that I think has a good chance of making the NCAA tournament. So it'd be interesting. Maybe Syracuse hosts UAlbany in one of the first two rounds later on. That would be interesting. Wouldn't be shocked if that happens. You mentioned Josh, Syracuse at home against number 23, Pittsburgh on Saturday. That's a 10 o'clock.
Doubleheader in the dome.
10 o'clock opening draw. That will be fun. Doubleheader in the dome. Should be a really fun day if you're a Syracuse lacrosse fan. Get in there early, wake up. There's Saturday morning cartoons right into Syracuse lacrosse. That will be that. Again, Syracuse plays Duke right after, and now we will toss to our interview with the amazing Duke lacrosse head coach, John Inevsky. We now have the pleasure of being joined by the head coach of Duke men's lacrosse, returnee of the podcast, 4 years running now, head coach John Donowski. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. It's my first one this year, so I'm excited to be with you guys.
First podcast, yeah, that's always a good thing.
We don't get a lot of coverage here, so it's basketball season, as you know, and our men and women are still alive, and I'm not sure that anybody realizes that we have a lacrosse team here on campus, so.
And that's why we love covering lacrosse, because the coaches are always willing to talk with us and are so accessible and awesome. So we really appreciate that. I just want to start with the season so far, 8-0 to start the year. The non-conference schedule, I think this season has been, I think, what I would call a little weaker than maybe years previously. What do you decide? What goes into those decisions about maybe scheduling some non-power conference lacrosse teams? And you still have Cornell coming up, obviously, but what goes into making the non-conference schedule?
One is budget, so that's always a, and two, to be perfectly honest, a lot of people have dropped us over the last. For example, Richmond, our date, Delaware came into their conference, and so Delaware they gave up our date with them to play Delaware because it was mandated by their conference. A couple of years ago, Loyola dropped us. Georgetown has dropped us. Johns Hopkins dropped us. I get it. Johns Hopkins has these traditional games where they play, all the locals. They play Maryland. They play Navy. They play, Virginia. Non-conference. And so once you lose a game on your schedule, it's hard to get them back. And I understand it. Listen, these guys are friends of mine. Some of them have to do it for all sorts of reasons, but scheduling is getting, tougher and tougher, budgets again being what they are, last year we had to pay Michigan $25,000 to come to Duke, because they couldn't afford to come to Duke in February, you every year you're kind of scrambling in February and March, to figure out. Who you can play, who's available, how much money you have to spend, over the course of the year. When we come to Syracuse, we like to charter because it's, as Syracuse charters when they come to us, because connecting commercial would be difficult, long and difficult, and so we raise money for that. It's stuff like that. So there's all these moving parts. This year, it's just the way it went. Next year, we'll try to change it again. But it's a long-winded answer to, there's just a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, coach, you mentioned your hand a little bit forced there in the beginning. You played two Ivies in the first five games last year. No Ivies in the first five this year, but you're one of four undefeated teams in Division One. However, the RPI puts you at seventh this week. Does it concern you at all that the ACC slate might have a pretty big impact on your team seeding come tournament time?
Nah, I mean, listen, it's one game at a time. We're not even thinking about making the playoffs yet. I mean, we're in no position to have those discussions. We've got to, approach each game. It sounds very coach trite, but it is truly one game at a time. And you want to be 1-0 at the end of the week, and so that's the goal. After Syracuse comes Virginia, after Virginia comes Cornell, after Cornell comes Notre Dame, after Notre Dame comes Carolina. And there's a scenario we could lose all five and be home and not be in the playoffs. So, for us to even consider those things, right now it's March still, and it's just, it's one practice at a time, really. We want to get better today at practice.
I want to talk about that game against Denver last weekend. Toughest game for you guys this season so far. Denver, obviously a good team. Syracuse went down to the wire with them as well. You fall behind 4-0 after the first quarter, respond with a 7-0 run. What does it say about your squad that they responded so well to adversity, maybe when that had you hadn't faced adversity so far this season?
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll certainly play that up, but it's only one game. It was hot. The weather was like in the mid 80s, and it was hot for both teams, for sure. They play a very unique style defensively. They really pack it in, rely on their goalie. Offensively, they scored twice in transition. In that first quarter, once an extra man, and just once in the box, and so we thought that if we could just keep the game in the box, that we would have a better chance to be successful. But I've never been in a game where we outshot, we score, we took 50 shots. I think they took 30. We made two saves. Over the course, we score seven goals in one quarter and score one goal in three quarters. If you had told me that we would have won that game, if that is how it played out, I would have thought you were crazy. So, every game has got its own life. It's got its own story. That was certainly a unique one for sure.
Yeah, and last year you had the chance to play Syracuse twice. You beat them in the regular season on your home turf and then fell to them in the ACC title game on that neutral site. What did you learn when looking at this year's Syracuse team when much of it is returning?
Yeah, they're dynamite. Listen, they're great. They're great in every position, starting from the goalie on out. Defensively, they're older, big and strong, great at the face-off X. Attack is dynamite. Tuariton, winner, Joey Spallina, in a runaway. I mean, we're just we're happy that this is going to be a great experience for us. But they blow people up at home, and it's going to be a great experience for our guys.
Both goalies excelled in last year's game, Jameson and McCool. Can you talk about how Jameson's been playing this year and what impresses you most about McCool?
Patrick, up until Sunday, I don't think he saw the ball real well. Early, and then again, he didn't see a lot of shots. He saw contested shots. He saw, shots from the perimeter. Again, he only made two saves, so that was probably his worst outing. But McCool is just one of those guys that he's a winner. He makes, first of all, the position is impossible to play, right? Everybody shoots it really hard. Every team has got guys who can bring it. And people, coach their offenses. Everybody coaches their offenses, in different ways, but he wins. And there are times where there are goals that he gives up, and you say, "Wow, Thought he could have had that, and then he makes a spectacular one. Great outlet passer, and a leader. So, if you give me John Galloway, former Syracuse great goalie, played for me on the world team, 2018, and the reason that we chose John was because we knew the guys wanted to play in front of him, and that's such a big, that's such a big intangible that you just can't put, your money on that his teammates want to play for him. That's what it appears anyway, without me having any knowledge.
And Coach Galloway came here with Vermont or with Vermont last year,
With Jacksonville.
Jacksonville last year, who you guys played earlier this season as well. So nice homecoming for him.
Yeah. And Coach, you mentioned briefly about the Dome crowd and how they beat teams badly at home. Last time you were at the Dome was in 2024, just four goals scored in that game. And that was a Wednesday night game. There were still about 5,000 plus fans. Can you speak on how tough an environment like that is to play in?
You know what? It's not so much the environment in that Syracuse is really good. Like when I was at Hofstra, people would say, man, you don't want to play Hofstra at night, because they're really good at night. It's like discrediting who our teams were. Yes, the lights and the evening is what makes teams, have a hard time. It's the fact that they're really good, and they're good. They're well coached. And they're good at every position, and they love, there's great, you can see Syracuse, when Coach Roy Simmons was there, one of the things about I've always loved about Syracuse lacrosse is that the kids love playing there, and you can see it, and you can see the joy, and when they play in front of their home fans, just like when our guys play here at Koskinen, the guys love playing in Koskinen. They love. This past weekend, we had a great crowd. People were kind of coming in for the women's basketball game, which was at 4 o'clock, and it was a really cool environment. It just says a lot for their program, their tradition, but who they are as a team.
You lose your top two scorers, Andrew McAdory, Eric Molliver. What's been impressive about the guys that have stepped up with you still have scored 20 goals four times this season?
Well, I think the interesting thing for us is this is 2 years in a row that we have three attackmen who have never played at Duke before, played attack. This year it's two freshmen and a junior. We've moved Ben Johnston down to attack. Last year it was Eric Malliver and Andrew McAdory, moved him to attack, and Andrew wasn't an attackman, and then Luke Graham, and then Luke Graham got hurt, and he was a fifth-year transfer. So, we've had to try to generate goals in different ways, off the face-off game, in transition, obviously extra man. We've only played extra man once in the last two games, 6-on-6 in the box. But we're trying to play a little faster, trying to ride a little bit, and trying to create some turnovers and create more possessions and less possessions, obviously, on defense. Because the attack we knew was going to be so young and so inexperienced.
Yeah, and Aiden McGuire, obviously one of the best defensive players in the country, last year's ACC co-defensive player of the year. How impressive is it for a shorty to get that award, and what do you make of him leading such a successful unit?
It's rare, for sure. And most young men who come to college, they have no interest in playing short stick team midfield. They all want to be offensive middies, but Aiden's personality and his skill set is more suited, to be a defender. And it is like having an extra pole, on the field. That he is, like all offenses are going to attack the short sticks. But I think, and Aiden has been a great leader this year for us. The guys voted him captain, and he's really done a great job in terms of leadership. And because the other guys that are going to play are going to be two sophomores with him and two freshmen. So again, very young, at that position.
You pulled Kyle Colsey away from Virginia and away from his brother, his father, obviously a legendary player here for Syracuse. What does it speak about him having such a successful season coming off a year where he didn't play due to injury?
You know, he's one of those guys that, you know, when you haven't played, and he didn't play in the fall at all either. You know, we were very conservative, you know, with his rehab. And, you know, since we have really good medicine here, great sports medicine department, you know, we decided, hey, listen, let's not. So he didn't go live at all. So he didn't play lacrosse for 2 years.
Wow.
And that's a long time, you know, and it's a, you go from being a high school star and having the ball on your stick all the time to trying to learn a system where you're part of a whole. And that's not easy, you know, and playing attack in college is not easy. So, you know, he's had the growing pains, you know, for sure. And there are some games where, you know, he has, you know, he's got his skills are obvious, and some where it's, you know, he's got, yeah, growing pains. You know, he's got to learn those things under fire. But, you know, he's been a delight to work with. He's very, very coachable, and he's healthy.
Well, thank you so much, Coach. We really appreciate you taking the time as always. Look forward to having you back on the Ostrom Avenue podcast next year, and good luck against Syracuse.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, you guys do a great job. I know I'm going to be watching you or listening to you on ESPN, you know, in the future. I know that, you know, the, your major, you know, will take you to those places, you know, at Syracuse. So with all your other fellow alumni who are, you know, on the airwaves.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Coach. Really
Coach.
appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much to Coach Janowski for taking the time. We always appreciate it. Love interviewing lacrosse coaches. Expect some more in the coming weeks. Potentially UNC head coach Bresci, Lars Tiffany. Hopefully we'll have him on the podcast for what seems like the 20th year in a row, although the pods have only been going on for about 6 or 7. But we got a full week of Syracuse sports, you know, maybe some headlines in the transfer portal coming up. Syracuse obviously plays Duke tomorrow. No, not tomorrow, Saturday. All these days are confusing. Today's Wednesday. They play Duke Saturday in the Dome as part of that doubleheader. Opening face-off is at 2. Make sure to tune in to McClurg Remodeling Countdown to Face-Off at 1:30. Should be a fun day of lacrosse. We have Syracuse ranked number 5, Duke ranked number 6. So maybe with a win, Syracuse back in the top 3, potentially. They got to get past UNC. If that's the case, I think Syracuse should be ranked above UNC. You know, Josh and I have had our
Kind of
gripes about.
smushed in between there.
Yeah, I
Well,
know.
Hughes is second in the RPI. I mean, they're
Yeah.
definitely giving them the benefit of the doubt for this road trip.
Yeah. I mean, we've had our gripes with Inside Lacrosse's rankings. You know, we appreciate Terry Foy coming on the podcast every year, but sometimes these rankings, I can't agree with them. And if you look on Terry's Instagram, not to bring up Inside Lacrosse rankings a little more, he always ranks the Cuse pretty low. And so that's all I'm
Doesn't
gonna
like
say.
everyone.
I don't think he does because he also picks against them pretty often. So if you we'll get Terry back on next season. Maybe if Syracuse makes a deep run, we'll bring him back on this year. But that's all we got on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Stay tuned, listen to prior episodes, our emergency podcast. If you want to listen to more talk about Jerry McNamara, you can tune into that one, episode 266. Wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, and of course at WAER.org. For Griffin and Josh, that's all we got for today's episode. Make sure to tune in next week for another amazing episode.